All right, a little discombobulated. We're good now. Good to check in with Brad Holmes. John, takeaways?
Gosh, there's so much. I mean, there's so many more things that I wanted to ask
I know.
Him. But in regards to Marcus Davenport, there's never been a question when he's healthy. He can be an effective player, and he would be great opposite Aiden Hutchinson, but he alluded to it. Like, he's had one struggle, and that's just being able to stay on the field, stay healthy. If we were talking about ifs earlier. There's little ones when we're talking about Tarik Skubal. There's big ones when we're talking about the health of Marcus Davenport. That one is in all caps. You don't know. Is he going to be available? How many games, if he is, would he even be there for?
Zadarius kind of played right into it. I mean, well, yeah, maybe a little later into camp is how I read that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what have I been saying all along?
I know.
Mets don't like camp.
I'm looking at you.
And, you know, first of all, especially when you have an extra week of training camp,
yep.
You have an extra game in training camp. I thought even before they announced that they were going to be in the Hall of Fame game, it was going to be sometime after Atlanta. And it may even be after, what is it, Miami next?
Sounds right.
It might be after that. Because
as long as it's here for week one, he's a vet. You trust him to get up to speed.
He's a pro. He knows this defense. Even though it's a different voice in Calvin Shepard, it's still a lot of the basics are the same. The terminology is going to be very similar. You know, throughout the course of the offseason, he's been a pro his entire career. You trust that he's in shape. He's been working out. It will take some time to ramp him up. But there's, you know, what is there, 3 weeks? There's 2 weeks in between the last preseason game and the first regular season game anyway. So 3 weeks is more than enough for him to get up to speed if that's the route they end up going.
You said, like, so much more we could ask him. I threw that cap question out there, and, like, it's kind of a bomb. You have to diffuse it. There's so many layers to it. There's so many follow-ups. Like, this idea of windows to compete in, they kind of reject. But there are windows that they have to operate in from a salary standpoint. And that's, I think, what is fueling their decisions to sign guys and not sign guys, knowing that every couple of years those chunks are going to have to get moved around and you're going to lose some dudes.
What was your take on his answer to Aiden Hutchinson? Not a lot of conversations.
Not intense
to this point.
Conversations.
Right.
Which to me says don't expect anything before the season. That's what I interpreted it.
Or even during the season.
Well, it's the next offseason. So basically he's going to go out and put some tape out there.
Yeah.
He's going to go let Micah Parsons get paid.
Yeah,
and then he's going to ask for more.
See if he can win himself a defensive MVP.
Yeah, and instead of going, hey, I know these guys are flirting with 40, 41, 42, I'm fighting for a number that starts with a 5. And whether I get it or not, I think that's what we're setting up for is, and I believe it's on Aiden's side. I've often said that.
Yeah.
Brad has tried to lock guys up early. They want to do that with all these other guys. Aiden's camp is going to say, well, we want to see what Trey Hendrickson gets paid.
Yeah.
We were waiting to see Myles Garrett and Watt, and we'll wait to see Micah Parsons' very public situation in Dallas. I have often thought that's an Aiden camp philosophy, and to hear Brad say no intense talks, I think only furthers that.
It does, but I think the one thing, because we've heard this for a lot of people, don't sign him until you find out what you're getting after the injury. I think he kind of addressed that with,
you know,
he had a similar injury at Michigan. It was a terrible leg injury. Came back and he was strong. You know the player that you're going to get with him. And because it didn't involve a joint, it was a broken bone. It was a very dramatic broken bone, but it wasn't the ankle. It wasn't the knee. I have no issue. I think he's going to have a terrific year. I think he's going to be the same, if not better. But there's going to be some people that take what Brad Holmes said and be like, well, they want to see before they offer him that deal.
Backup quarterback. I think we asked three questions about the backup quarterback.
But
it's on people's mind with the game coming up on Friday, and they acknowledge Hendon Hooker's going to get a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, and he'll get an opportunity to show how much he's grown. We've heard about the competition. Competition drives success. And so we'll get a chance to see it. And it's not, you know, everybody thinks, well, it's a competition between Hendon Hooker and Kyle Allen.
No.
If that's the way that Hendon Hooker is viewing that or Kyle Allen is viewing that, that's a huge disservice to themselves. The competition is with himself. How can I get better and not be a 0 out of 10 against Atlanta? What do I have to do to be better than I was at practice on Wednesday when we're watching it here so that it shows improvement? It also shows that I can be the guy that they can rely on if the worst happens.
Not where I thought you were going to go, but I acknowledge that. I thought you were going to say they're not competing with them, the team.
Oh, they're competing
with the league.
Other,
they're competing with Carson Wentz. They're competing with anybody who may
but
be
again,
cut in the next 2 weeks.
But again, if your focus is on I'm competing with Carson Wentz or I'm competing with whatever other mythical quarterback that they would bring in for number two.
Carson Wentz is a real person, not mythical.
Right. But it's you're doing yourself a disservice.
Right.
You're distracting yourself.
Yeah, you can only control from a what should he be focused on today? Yes, but in reality, he is competing not just for the guy with the guys on this roster.
What, with everybody in the league?
But as we saw last year, he was the number two, and it just wasn't right to have him be the number two for the playoffs.
Yeah.
He still has to earn that mantle.
He does. And again, if you're trying to figure out how can I be better than Carson Wentz, you're distracting yourself from preparing this game plan. You're trying to do too much, and you're going to go out there and say, well, I have to make this throw where – it might not be the smartest thing to do. You're going to take chances you shouldn't take. So it's simply just compete with yourself. Be better than you were yesterday.
Takeaways from Brad Holmes. What stood out to you guys? 248-539-9797. They're sounding the horn at practice. It's going on right around us. A.J. Hinch at 935. Tigers sprint to the finish. A little more urgency from A.J. It's 97-1.
Injury attorney David Femininio is the guy you want to call if you're ever hurt in an accident. But what he really wants is for all of us to be safe. He knows how tragic accidents can be. That's why he started David's Driving Edge, to spread awareness about distracted driving and help us with all the tips to be better prepared on the road. If we can prevent accidents before they happen, that's the real win, and we all win in that one. Learn more at getdavidgetpaid.com/drivingedge. That's getdavidgetpaid.com/drivingedge.
Twins take down the Tigers. Rubber match today. Day game. Carson Anderson going to be out at gate A for that one.
Yeah. I mean, it is the rubber match, and it's one that this team should win.
Should.
Take care of business.
This is the month to pick up some steam,
yeah.
Beat some bad clubs, build an even bigger lead in this division, put yourself in a great spot for a bye in the first round of the American League playoffs. This is the time to do it. A.J. Hinch will join us at 9:35. A little more urgency from A.J.
Talking
about a sprint to the finish.
Sprint to the finish. There's 40, what, some odd
give or
games.
Take.
Yeah, and it really is. And my takeaway from talking to A.J. was that sprint is we want to make sure that, one, we have all the pieces in place. I know everything about the relievers that we have or the pitching staff, the new arms that we got. I also want to make sure that, because we talked to him about Riley Green.
Yeah.
Make sure that he's up and running at full speed. Matt Vierling, make sure that he takes care of business this month. But it's about getting those one and two seeds.
Because when you get to September, you're going to face the Mets and the Yankees. And I know the Yankees are on a skid, but those are better ball clubs that you're going to face in September. You're going to get Cleveland, I believe, six times, two different series with the Guardians.
Yep.
So right now is the time to solidify some of this.
Yes.
And now or never. I mean, John, there's no more trade deadline. These are the dudes they have. Either it's going to work or it's not. If I ask you glass half full, glass half empty, do you feel like they've got the guys to do it?
I do. Now, they all have to perform at a high level. We've seen it at times. I don't know if we've ever seen it. Okay, there's been some games here and there where we've seen great pitching, great hitting. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take elite concentration and elite performance, which is, okay, what? How do you define a World Series champion?
Yep.
You're going to have all those things come together at the right time, and this is the month for them to solidify all of those little details.
There are stories of teams that are just good, not great, that win the World Series.
Sure.
So it can happen, but I think they are in that category of team. I think they're a good, not great team.
Oh, yeah, I don't know that there's – if you said that this team was great, and we kind of always tried to make sure we're using the right words at the beginning of the season. When they had the best record in Major League Baseball, they were still just a good team. They weren't a great team. And win the World Series, I don't know that I'd look on this and say, like the 84 team, I would put that in the great category.
Yes.
I wouldn't put this team in the great category.
And we've seen great Tiger teams, and I would say we had great Tiger teams, not win the World
right.
Series. So, again, some of this is a crapshoot. Bullpens are volatile. I would have liked a little more stability in terms of track record. So, like Paddock yesterday showed you the other side of the coin. His first start was good. His second start was bad. The truth is he's a 5 ERA pitcher. And Morton, who I know AJ has a special relationship with, they were in Houston together, is also a 5 ERA pitcher.
Yeah.
His second start may be like Paddock's second start. Montero, we finally got to see Rafael Montero's Tiger debut. Couldn't find the strike zone. So, and that's more of his track record as a guy who's already been DFA'd. They added a lot of these guys who they have to wave a magic wand. And this year, even with Chris Fetter, they have one of the worst bullpens in baseball, and they don't get enough swing and miss. I don't foresee that magically fixing itself, so I would put them in that category, I guess, glass half empty. But we've seen good, not great teams win at all, so it's not like I'm turning the channel, cancel the season, but that's my read of the situation.
Yeah, and I mean, even tonight with Flaherty, right? He's got two sides of that coin. Is he going to be the good Flaherty, or is he going to be the one that gets hit up in the first inning? Mize, you can have 66 great pitches, but it only takes three to ruin what otherwise would have been a really quality start. And, you know, thankfully they were three solo home runs, but if there's somebody on base, then all of a sudden, hey, things change. And that's why when you get to the end of the season, AJ has to figure out, how do I get the best out of my team?
I'm getting a kick out of what's going on right here.
Oh, yeah.
In Chalet 2 at the Lions training camp.
Rory's here.
Yeah, Rory's here. Yeah. Hey, Rory, how you doing, man?
My kids are terrified.
Yeah. Jack's not a big fan either. Rory, it's not you. All right. It's just the kids.
Yes.
Little kids, yep.
Brooks is screaming his head off.
Is he excited? Where's Brooks at? Oh,
he's
over there.
He's in Colin's arms.
Yeah. Oh.
And Teddy has this little shake when he gets a little bit nervous about a creature coming towards him. He gets his elbow going, and he got this little shake. And
he gave him a fist bump, though.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
all
he
right.
did.
Steps in the right direction.
Uh-huh.
How much do you guys love taking your kids out to this?
Oh, my God. I've had a huge smile on my face this whole segment because I'm just watching them here. It's so exciting.
Yeah,
lots of
and
fun.
I don't know how much Teddy will remember that he's 3 years old.
Right.
You know, like, will this be one of his earliest memories? I don't know. But having some of the other kids who are older to be able to be here and experience this, it's just like any Lions fan, right? You want to be able to see the team and take in the atmosphere.
Well, let's get to Heather's news. Keep the show rolling.
Let's do it. Well, there's a James Beard-nominated chef who's just opened a brand-new restaurant in Ann Arbor. Little Kim. It's this much-anticipated vegetarian
that's,
forward
That's Little
concept.
Kim, not Lil Kim?
Not Lil. It's not
the
Lil
rapper?
Kim.
Yeah.
No. Not to be confused with Lil Kim. This is Little Kim.
I know. I saw some excitement over there. I'm like, well, we need to make sure that we specify this is Little Kim.
Kim. Yes, it's a vegetarian forward concept restaurant. It's now open, and it's right across the street from Kim's.
Okay.
So
that's Big Kim?
Miss Kim. Same owner.
I apologize, Miss Kim.
Same owner, same chef has both of them. So Miss Kim is across the street. Little Kim right there.
Okay.
So the chef, the owner of both, says that this new eatery reflects cuisines of Korea, Japan, China, and India. All vegetarian menu, so John will never go there. Has a focus on also, what?
I have gone to vegetarian restaurants before. It's not it, like if I'm picking a restaurant, but if my wife wants to go there, I don't know what's on their menu.
I mean, you're,
like a salad?
Veggies are gone. No, salads are gone.
He doesn't eat vegetables. Fruits?
Salad? Is this
tofu?
Vegan or is
it's
it?
Vegetarian, but there are vegan dishes available.
Okay, so can you have cheese?
Not if you're vegan.
Yes,
if you are, if you're vegetarian.
On a vegetarian.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So hey, put a little cheese on those vegetables.
You do grilled cheese.
Put a little gravy on there.
Yeah, you cut your grilled cheese as
sure.
So. Yeah.
I don't think Little Kim's has grilled cheese.
Well, if she's a James Beard nominated chef, I mean,
she can whip up one.
Go back to the basics.
It might be the best grilled cheese you've
ever
had.
It might be.
Could
that's
be.
The case. Dusty May and Michigan agreed on a new contract in February, but it wasn't until recently that it became official. And the new contract was signed last month, and this five-year deal goes through 2029-2030 through that season. It will pay May $25.5 million, which is $6 million more than his original deal.
Mm-hmm. Look, and they ended the season strong, and he's been a demon in the portal, so it makes sense.
Last season, the average annual salary of a men's basketball coach is $5.1 million.
Look, you got to pay to keep up.
You do, and I mean, like, so a part of that negotiation wasn't just money for me. It was money for assistants. It was commitments in NIL. To whom much is given, much is expected. And second year of Dusty May, there's high expectations for this team.
Yep. Washington Capitals star Alex Ovechkin has partnered with a Russian technology company to produce a movie, or it could be a series or a documentary
about his career,
okay. Which is pretty darn cool. It sounds like there's more to this deal. Like, he's going to be a spokesperson for the tech company, an ambassador as well, maybe appear in some commercials and such. But
I wonder if in the movie they'll use some footage from one of his early interviews.
with you.
Yeah. So when he was first in the league, right, I used to have a Monday night show on Comcast. It was, Monday Night Live, something like that. And
creative.
Yeah, we are. I didn't come up with a name. Not that I would have come up with anything better. But that was the first time I did an interview through an interpreter. Because he would answer, and some of it was in English, some of it was in Russian. I'm like, okay, here we go. Chick Hernandez was, and still does a lot of stuff in the D.C. area. I kind of let him take the lead on that one. I need somebody with some experience.
Look, I'd be curious to watch a series about his career, a movie
about his
career. He's all-time goal scorer.
Yeah, and a great, by all accounts, a great teammate.
So millennials have been known, I think we've killed off straws.
Yeah.
Napkins, I think, was in there. And I'm sure a slew of other things the millennials have just ruined. But Gen Zers are next. And they are killing off one of my favorite breakfast cereal. Well,
breakfast foods.
The cereal. They're killing off cereal. Who doesn't like cereal? Sales of boxed cereal have been declining in the U.S. now for over 25 years. But experts say it's really this younger generation, the Gen Z, that has really had a shift in how they eat breakfast. They actually say Gen Z, they're not eating breakfast.
Oh, that's
common,
yeah.
They're foregoing it altogether. But when they do eat breakfast, they're choosing eggs, fruits, toast, pancakes instead of cereal. And they're also eating more vegetables at breakfast than any other generation.
So they're good for them.
Yeah, I would say they're label readers.
Well, they're avoiding the sugary cereal, and they're eating real food, eggs and fruits and vegetables and, you know, stuff to fill you up in the morning. Waffles and pancakes.
Young people, how dare they. It does say that they do buy cereal, but when they are, they're not actually eating it for breakfast. They're eating it as just like a snack. Or using it for a different meal,
I guess. You love cereal. What's your favorite cereal?
I love cereal. I eat cereal every single day.
Does she not have the palate of an 8-year-old child?
I'm not lying.
I act like an 8-year-old. She eats like an 8-year-old.
I do. I mean, I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch, probably my all-time favorite, but it all depends on what I'm in the mood for. I mean, I like just basic cornflakes. I can go super basic cornflakes, Rice Krispies, or I can do like the really sugary crap, but I like it all. I don't discriminate. Cereals are all good.
Where's Tom to tell us they're after his Lucky Charms in that cringy Irish voice?
Yeah. this is really interesting. There's a couple that are going viral after selling tickets to their wedding weekend. And some of the guests had to pay nearly $1,000
just to get into the wedding?
Attend. So the couple says that they are baffled by the overpriced tradition of a traditional wedding, right?
Okay,
and it is.
Right.
It is shocking. I get it as well. So they decided to create a case study on their own wedding by selling tickets to prove that weddings can be funded so that marriages start out without this financial strain. So they had two ticket packages for their wedding. The basic ticket was $57 per person. That covered admission to the wedding ceremony and the reception. That's what you get.
Food or no?
Yeah, you get the food at the reception. I'm guessing they still wanted people to gift them money, too. This was just your ticket in the door. And then those wanting to make a full weekend out of the event could purchase the second option for $997. Oh. Two tickets. You get the rehearsal dinner. You get the reception still. And then you get the brunch and recovery lounge the day afterward. And you get priority seating. And you get to get your brand profile spotlighted in the wedding program.
Oh, your brand profile. Do you have a brand profile?
No, I guess I put my cookies. Yeah, I put my Twitter at on it. Like, what? That's silly.
It's very strange, and it sounds like they made a boatload of money. It said after they broke even, they donated the remaining $132,000 to a charity.
How many people paid money for this wedding?
They said there was other ways you could add on. That they threw on other little like extra ticket prices. I don't know. Insanity.
I mean, the way it's bizarre. Tiered, like, do they have an option to walk the bride down the aisle? I mean, how many things were they selling with this?
Pretty crazy, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, I'm going to filter myself.
Okay, John. Yeah. It's Heather with the news. Coming up next, AJ Hinch, 97.1.